हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
So reading from the Mahabharata, chapter 4, Duryodhana begins his evil schemes, right? So we remember that last time is that the Duryodhana had this scheme or this plan where he wants to get rid of Bhima because Bhima is so strong, it makes him and his brothers look very foolish. And it's not just once or twice, it's continuously, right? And he's hoping to be the crown prince. But then Bhima just plays with them as if they're straws. So then he works out the plan to have a nice picnic down next to the Jamuna, and they all go down, and Duryodhana personally feeds Bhima, feeds them, and then with his own hand, but he's mixed poison in the food equivalent to kill 20 men. So then he feeds Bhima, completely. Then after they finish eating, then all the Pandavas and the Duryodhana Adis, they all go down to the Jamuna and sport in the water, do different things than that. Then they all get tired, they go back to the their kind of camping place, that palace that Dhritarashtra has made, and only then does Bhima become a little tired, and so he comes tired from playing in the water, and so then he just goes to sleep on the bank of the Jamuna. So then Duryodhana and Dushasana come, they tie him up and they push him into the water, thinking, okay, now we've gotten rid of him. But then, being that he's son of Vayu, so he being a celestial personality, then he floats down and then goes through the path of the Nagas and gets to Nagaloka. And then on Nagaloka, then when he arrives there, the snake guards, then they get scared that a human showed up, and they immediately bite him. So then the combination between the poison of of their poison, the snake poison, counteracts the plant poison that Duryodhana had fed him. And so then he comes back, it's counteracted, so then he starts fighting with them and all that. Then they go running off and tell the king, tell Vasuki, and then he goes to see who is this. And then they see it's Bhima, and Bhima is one of the snakes there, Arka, his relative, a great grandson, I think, yeah, great or even great great grandson. And then Vasuki thinks, okay, then we should felicitate and give him some nice gifts. What shall we give him? Gold and this and that. And Arka says, no, let's give him our amrita, our nectar. And then give a place, they bring a pot, he drinks it. He drinks 8 pots. And then he goes to sleep for 8 days to assimilate it. So it all goes into his body nicely, and then he becomes strong. So then afterwards, Arka says, you'll be as strong as 10,000 elephants. And then he says, because you've been gone for a long time, your relatives are going to feel anxiety, so you should go back. So then they take him back to the same spot where he came. And then we remember Kunti and the Pandavas are looking for him everywhere. They think Duryodhana has done something, which he has, but they think Duryodhana has been successful when actually Duryodhana did something, but it actually worked out worse for him, right? So if he's worried that Bhima, he tosses them around like just like they're dolls or something, now he's so many times stronger like that. And so then, it backfired on him. So now then we continue with the story. For 8 days, Kunti and her sons waited anxiously for any news of Bhima. It was almost intolerable. On earth, then early on the 9th day, they saw him running towards them, his white silks flowing in the wind, right? Because they had dressed him up very nicely on Nagaloka. He came straight to Kunti and bowed at her feet. Her tears fell freely as she reached down to touch and bless him. As he rose, each of his brothers embraced him warmly. Thanking the Lord for a safe return, they eagerly asked where he had been, right? Because all being devotees, they know it's by Krishna's arrangement. Because the point is, if Krishna wants to protect you, no one can kill you. And if Krishna wants to kill you, no one can protect you. Yeah. Bhima knew everything about the circumstances by which he had come to be in the river. When he had found himself bound with cords, he had suspected the envious Duryodhana. Vasuki had confirmed his suspicions. The Naga king could see everything by virtue of his celestial vision, right? Because Vasuki is the number two snake in the celestial snake in the universe. So he's the king. His number one is Ananta, Anantadev. But Anantadev doesn't want to spend time with the snakes, so he goes and takes up service with Vishnu. So that leaves then Vasuki as the king. So because they're celestial, then he could see everything. Bhima related the whole story to his brothers, how he had gone to the Naga kingdom and had been given the rasa. The brothers could understand that even though the Kauravas had plotted Bhima's death, somehow, by the arrangement of providence, he'd become most fortunate. Right? So even though someone's plotting against you, it comes out even better for you. So if Krishna wants things to go, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are. The same circumstances that can be a disturbance for one person then becomes a glory for someone else. So that's why the devotees, they just depend upon Krishna. They do their best, and they depend upon Krishna, but the results they know Krishna's going to give. We can't produce results. We can simply produce effort. So we use our intelligence, we put in our effort, and then the best effort we do to get the best result for Krishna, and then Krishna will arrange it how he likes. So sometimes we do something wonderful, it comes out simple. Sometimes we do something very simple, it comes out wonderful. So it's up to Krishna. How he wants the particular activity to unfold, because he has a bigger plan, how things will work out. Yudhishthira was shocked to learn of his cousin's antagonism, right? Because remember before, Yudhishthira, because he's so honest, then he didn't believe anybody else was dishonest. He thought everyone was like him. You know, just like Bhima is so strong, he thinks everybody else is strong, so he deals with them in that way. You know, because they're just children at this point. He considered the situation carefully. If their elders were informed of what had occurred, then there would be open enmity between the princes. Duryodhana would certainly try to dispose of them as quickly as possible, right? Because when it comes up that he had made this attempt, then everybody's going to talk, it's going to be a problem for Duryodhana, so he will want to get rid of the Pandavas very quickly. That's Yudhishthira's thinking. And the Pandavas' position was not strong, right? It's only five of them. Their father was dead, and Dhritarashtra was the king. He doted on Duryodhana and his other sons, and it was unlikely he would side against his own sons to protect his nephews. Right, so if it wasn't his own sons, then Dhritarashtra, by his training, he sees everybody equally. He deals with all citizens the same. But somehow or another, when it comes to his son, then he's overly attached. That's the difficulty. Yudhishthira ordered his brothers to remain silent. They should tell no one about what had occurred. Kunti, however, confided in Vidura, right? Because Vidura then was always taking care of them, and he would see the things very nicely. He asked her to follow Yudhishthira's suggestion, right? Not to talk to people about it. Thus the Pandavas said nothing, but from that day forward they became vigilant, always watching the Kauravas, especially Duryodhana and Dushasana. Right? So before that, they were just carefree. You know, they were children, they just did whatever they did, and they didn't think anything was wrong. But now they know Duryodhana's brothers are, wanting to get rid of them. So even though they don't say anything, they're relaxed, they do everything as normal, they're always watching and seeing what Duryodhana is doing, what his plans are, and that to just make sure that he doesn't do anything to get them again. Besides Gandhari's 100 sons, Dhritarashtra had conceived another son by a servant maid who had waited upon him during his wife's lengthy pregnancy. Unlike his half-brothers, this boy, Yuyutsu, felt no envy or antagonism towards the Pandavas. Right? So Yuyutsu, because you see, he's a great warrior also. He's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. And so there's 100 sons that are the Dhritarashtras, the Duryodhanadis. But Yuyutsu is 101. So he always is with them, but he's different, because he doesn't have any ill feelings towards the Pandavas. Like you see, then during the battle, he actually fought on the Pandavas' side. He didn't fight on Duryodhana's side. One day, he secretly informed Yudhishthira that Duryodhana, who had been deeply disappointed to see that his plan to kill Bhima had failed, had again cooked a large quantity of the deadly Datura poison into Bhima's enormous meal. Right? So Datura is a plant that's used, and it's very poisonous. So, yeah. So then he's again done this because it didn't work last time. So he's thinking, okay, he put enough poison to kill 20 people, grown men. So this time it sounds like he's putting, a large quantity. So that means, he's probably enough to kill 100 people. Right? He just wants to make sure. Bhima laughed when he heard the news. Having drunk the Naga's celestial elixir, he had no fear of Duryodhana. Right, so by not only become as strong as 10,000 elephants, but by drinking their celestial, that rasa, that elixir, that nectar, then he's impervious to poison. He can't be poisoned like that. No poison can kill him. No poison can have any effect. He sat down before him and cheerfully consumed the entire quantity of poisoned food, right? Because Duryodhana would make sure it was really, really nicely cooked. All the best things. He wouldn't. Let's say, put the poison. Let's say some pantabat or something, right? Or like that. He's going to put it into something that Bhima really likes, nicely cooked stuff. So Duryodhana was amazed to see that Bhima was not in the least affected. He gazed at the Pandavas with open hatred, right? Because here is somebody. He's supposed to be the prince. That means he's supposed to be the most qualified person on the planet, in one sense, as far as rulers go. And so that means he has authority over everybody, right? The idea is if you're emperors, you have authority over all other kings, therefore the whole planet. And here are people who he's not authority over. Whatever he tries, it doesn't work on them. He's tried to poison them twice, it doesn't work. Their power, their good qualities, how everybody appreciates them on all levels, the Pandavas are better. And so says with open hatred. So you can see he really hates it when he looks at him. It's not that he's trying to hide it. And it may be that he doesn't even know that he's doing it. It's not even that he's trying that they should know. No, it's just he can't conceal it. Although the Kaurava princes detested the Pandavas, Bhishma and Vidura loved them and would spend much time with the five virtuous and gentle princes, right? Because they would behave nicely. They would deal with their elders properly. While Duryodhana and his brothers, they were very proud of their position, so they didn't deal with their elders properly. They didn't totally disrespect them, but they didn't properly respect them. They didn't follow the etiquette. But you see, as the Pandavas followed the etiquette, so they became dear to all of them. Bhishma had been especially fatherly toward them since the time they had arrived from the forest. He had been fond of Pandu. Now he felt the same fondness for Pandu's sons, right? Because they came from the forest, and so there wasn't so much there. The boys reciprocated his love and served him in various ways. Right, so he had appreciation for them, then they reciprocated that, so it was a very nice relationship. The Pandavas were also favored by their military teacher, Kripa. Kripa was the noble-minded son of a Brahmin who had adopted the warrior's profession. He told the princes his history. His father, a rishi named Gotama, had been engaged in fierce austerities and weaponry practice, for which he had an affinity, right? So he was very much into the weapon practice. See, because Prabhupada mentioned a Brahmin can learn anything, teach anything. So that means all the different arts and sciences, all the various knowledge that's there in the Vedas, then the Brahmins teach all that. And so depending upon the area that they're interested in, some will be into the teaching scripture, and some will be into the puja, into the yajnas. Some will be into doing the various, the samskaras and all those things and weddings. And then within the scriptures, then some teach the Veda, some will teach the Pancharatra, some will teach Sanskrit. And so in this case, then his area of expertise was then in the martial science. So that would be the Dhanurveda. And so that's just the area that he really likes. So some might think, because he's fighting and he knows all this, therefore he's a Kshatriya. But no, like Drona, he also was very expert in the martial sciences. And so they will teach this. They'll train the others in that. Gautama's asceticism, martial arts, martial skills were so great that even Indra feared the Rishi might exceed him in power and usurp his position in heaven. Right? Because Indra is worried about his position. It's not, means he's doing it as service to the Lord. And he does all the management of the universe for the Lord's happiness. But he specifically wants to be in that position of authority and power. So he's always worried if someone else is becoming powerful, then he's thinking they also want to become Indra. When it's not necessarily, especially the sages. The sages, so many times, they're just doing like this. And in any case, he's Indra, and he'll be Indra for, you know, the time that he's supposed to be. So 71 cycles of the yugas, 71 Mahayugas. So after, if someone does something that's so extraordinary that they would deserve by their piety to become Indra, then they'll become the next Indra. They won't take his place. But somehow or another, Indra always gets in anxiety about this. Because the demons come, they try to take the place. That anxious god therefore sent a beautiful apsara, a heavenly nymph, to divert Gautama from his asceticism. When the rishi saw the apsara before him, he lost control of his mind. And his semen fell from his body. It landed on a clump of heath. And from it, two children were born. Right, so heath is like sharp grass. So when it fell, it divided into two and became a boy and a girl. Gautama fled after seeing the apsara, not realizing that he had miraculously sired the children. Right, so they're so powerful that even without impregnating a woman, they can still father children. It's like Drona, then he was born in a cup, a clay pot, and then Gautama's children, Kripa and Kripi, then they were born, you know, in the grass, like that. Soon after he left, some of the king's soldiers found the two babies and brought them to Hastinapur. Sometime later, Gautama, understanding everything by his mystic power, came to the city and explained to the king what had happened. The rishi taught his son all his military schools, and in time, Kripa became the teacher of the princess. So then he was living in the palace. He learned everything, and because his father was so expert, and he being a Brahmin, he became very expert. And so then he was the one who was teaching all the Kshatriya princes, even though he's a Brahmin. That's the point. Brahmins know how to learn any subject matter, how to teach any subject matter. Then one day the boys ran to Bhishma with a strange tale to tell. They had been out playing ball in the woods. The ball fell into a deep, dry well, and the princes could not recover it. As they stood by the well, looking at one another in embarrassment, a dark man approached them. He was a Brahmin, appearing emaciated and poor. So he was very, very thin, you know, dark and all that, and, you know, not having much, you know, nice clothes and that. But with a bright effulgence and glowing eyes. So that means he had, you know, great brahminical tejas, great power. The princes surrounded the Brahmin and asked if he could help them. What use is your skill in arms if you cannot even retrieve a lost ball? He's saying. So the Brahmin's saying to them, he says, you've learned all this military skills, but you can't get the ball out of the well. So what's the use of all your skill? If you give me a meal, I'll recover the ball as well as this ring of mine. Right? So he said, if you feed me nicely, a nice meal, right? Because they're princes, so they'll arrange a nice meal. If you do that, I'll get your ball out. Plus, he takes his own ring, and I'll get that out. Because otherwise, if it's just the ball, that's easy. But he's showing a ring. That's even more difficult. He then took off his ring and threw it into the well. Yudhishthira said to him, O Brahmana, if you can recover the ball and ring, then, with Kripa's permission, we shall ensure you are maintained for your whole life. Right? So it's not that we'll just give you a meal. His point is that we'll take care of you the rest of your life. It means you can live here in the palace, we'll take care, and you train us and everything, right? So Kripa's there, so between Drona and Kripa, then they'll be their teachers. The Brahmin took a handful of long grass and said, watch as I invest these grass with the power of weapons. With these, I shall pierce the ball and bring it to the surface. Right, so he's taken regular grass. So The Kshatriyas, then they'll use their the bows and the arrows. They'll chant mantra and invest them with a particular potency, or even sometimes the javelins, the spears. They'll chant mantras and then throw those. So he's saying, I'm just taking this grass and I'll chant mantras, and the grass will become a weapon. With these I shall pierce the ball and bring it to the surface. He chanted mantras. And threw the grass one by one into the well. The first one pierced the ball, and each subsequent blade he threw stuck into the last one to form a long chain, right? So you have the ball down in the well that they're playing with. He throws one blade of grass, it goes into the ball. Then the next one goes into the back of the last grass, right? So you hear sometimes of people shooting an arrow and then shooting another arrow and then hitting in the same place and splitting the arrow. So the arrow is a little bit bigger, you know, it'll be like this big. But we're talking about a blade of grass, which is, you know, very small. So it's so expert that he could get it to poke into the back of each one. And then from that, he made a long chain that came up to where he is. And then he just pulled up the grass and pulled out the ball. The princes were astonished. This is truly wonderful. But let us now see you raise the ring, right? Because the ball will look easier because it's bigger. The Brahmin borrowed one of the prince's bows and shot a single sharp-pointed arrow into the well. With it, he brought up the ring, caught on the arrow's head. The princes crowded around him and asked him to reveal his identity. They had never seen such a skill. The Brahmin told them to go to Bhishma and describe what they had seen, right? So he didn't say himself, because otherwise you say they still won't know who he is. If he says, I'm Drona, and that, and you know, it's kind of like, you know, father of Ashwatthama, you know, and it's like, well, they don't know who he is, right? So then that's the whole thing is that he says, go tell all, whatever's happened here, go tell Bhishma, because Bhishma will know who he is. Then you'll get the proper reception. Okay, the Brahmin then told him to go to Bhishma and describe what they had seen. He would know his identity. The Brahmin said he would wait there until they returned. Thus the boys ran back, because he doesn't want to just go in with them. He has to be received. Right? Thus the boys ran back to the city and told Bhishma everything. When he heard the tale, his eyes shone with joy. Surely this could only be Drona, the disciple of his own martial teacher, Parasuram. Right? So he learned, studied for Parasuram. And Drona, you know, then studied from Parasuram. And so then, how are you going to get a better teacher, right? Because Bhishma, no one can beat Bhishma. And so you want a teacher on that equal level, and so that's Drona. So he recognizes who he is. Because Drona had come with the idea to become the teacher for the princes. So if he just kind of walks in and begs and all, that won't work, because you're working with Kshatriyas. So Kshatriyas, that pride, you know, they don't beg and everything like that. So that's why he came, showed something amazing. Then after that, told him, he doesn't say his name, go tell Bhishma. He'll know. And then Bhishma will come out and invite him in, and then you'll see it'll just be nicely arranged. And so immediately he's the teacher. He doesn't have to ask. Bhishma had heard much about Drona from the rishis. This was certainly providential. The princes could have no better teacher. Bhishma went in person with the boys to see the Brahmin, right? So that was the arrangement. Because then if Bhishma self comes and respects Drona, then how much the boys will have to respect Drona. That way he'll be able to teach them so nicely. Finding, as he had suspected, that it was Drona, Bhishma immediately offered him the position of a royal teacher. Drona accepted and went to Hastinapur with Bhishma. When they were back in the city, right, because they would go to outside of the main city to play in the gardens and that, because every city, according to Manu, you have the city, but the city has to have a certain amount of free land around it. You know, so it'll have the forest, it'll have gardens, it'll have pasturing grounds, it'll have the, agricultural land. So depending upon the size of the city, that's how much land. So the bigger the city, the more land has to be around. So the idea is no two cities will bump into each other. Like in the modern thing, the cities keep growing until they touch. Like in Los Angeles at our temple in Watsika Avenue, the side of the temple, that side of the street that the temple's on is one city. And the other side of the street, where all the apartments are, the devotees live, it's another city. Like that. So the middle of the street is the line between. So that should never happen in the Vedic idea. So when they when they meet, so that that lands, so that's where it ends. Then if you want to grow, you have to start another city. When they were back in the city, Bhishma had Drona tell everyone of his history. Drona looked around at the eager-faced princes, right? Because they want to know who he is, how is he like that. They wanted to know everything about this unusual Brahmana. He was the son of Bharadvaj, the all-powerful rishi, who had dwelt for thousands of years in the deep forest, and who, not long ago, had finally ascended to heaven. Although a Brahmin, Drona was inclined towards martial arts, like Kripa. Because like we said, some will be into these more directly brahminical activities. Others, it means they perform the brahminical activities, they teach the brahminical activities. But we see here is that with Drona and Kripa, they know the kshatriya activities and teach them. They don't necessarily perform them in the way of that they don't fight or they don't manage the kingdom, but they know how it runs, how to do. Just like, let's say, you have the Brahmin who's the Rajguru, the king, the guru for the king. So he's the lead Brahmin of all the Brahmins. That means he has to know administration, because he'll be running a group of persons who are keeping an eye on the whole kingdom to give him information. So if everything's going right or not, then he will tell the king, because the king has his spies and everything that watch the kingdom. But if something's corrupt, the king might not know about it. So the Rajguru has his own system. So there's two systems going on. And so that way, if anything comes up that the king doesn't know about, the Rajguru will know about it. And then the Rajguru can instruct if need be. If the king doesn't know what to do, he can give directions and everything like that. While living in his father's hermitage, he had learned the science of arms from Agnivesha, another powerful rishi. Right? So it's not uncommon that the rishis know the martial sciences. But the point is they teach it. That's their main thing. Like Arjuna, he doesn't really specifically teach. Right? He knows it. He uses it. He had also received knowledge of the celestial weapons from the great Parasuram. So how to use the bow and arrow, all these different things, all the fighting techniques, everything. But then the celestial weapons, you have to learn from someone who knows them. Because that's the particular mantras, how they can be used, what uses against what. Because you have to know how it works. It's not just you have it and you use it. You have to use it in the proper way. If you don't, it makes trouble. You know, if someone says fire, then you have to use a water weapon. And, you know, all these things. Because if it's a fire and you use fire, then it'll create too much problem for everybody. So you have to know. Plus the strength of it, he's sending one with 25,000 mantras. You have to send one with 25. Because if you send one with 50, that means it will stop it. But then 25,000 mantras will be lost. You know, from what I understand, then it creates like a very light, a pleasant rain. So on the battlefield, sometimes the kings would do that just for the pleasure of the other warriors that were there. They'll set a weapon that's a little more powerful, and then the resulting piety that's there will create this very fine, nice rain that will create a cooling atmosphere for the kings. But the point is it's lost. So you have to know exactly what's going. So you have to, celestial weapons, you know, are its own training. Despite having such great learning, however, Drona remained a poverty-stricken Brahmin. So he had all this knowledge, all this ability, but still he was just poverty-stricken because, you know, unless someone knows what he's doing, then how would they engage him? He could hardly maintain his family. Thus he had been on his way to Hastinapur, hoping to be engaged as the prince's teacher. So he had come there with the idea to become the teacher. Bhishma said, "Reside here in the city. You shall enjoy every luxury along with the Kurus. Indeed, the Kurus are at your command. Whatever wealth, kingdoms, and followers belong to our house are also yours, O best of Brahmanas. It is our good fortune that you have arrived here." Drona was giving a large, well-furnished house, stocked with everything enjoyable and attended by many servants. He then brought his wife and son to Hastinapur to live among the Kurus with him. And he accepted both the Pandavas and Kauravas as his disciples. Okay, so we'll stop here and then. We'll continue with Drona's teaching the princes tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.